It's Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today. And coming up, weed in Wisconsin. We'll be joined by a state representative and the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws about the latest push for legalized medical marijuana in our state, as well as the latest on the pushback. We'll also be joined by... That's coming up, but now it's Food Friday and our weekly step into the WPR kitchen. This week, we're getting to know the most popular small appliances that can make our cooking more simple and easy in a big way. Air fryers, slow cookers, and pressure cookers are among the top holiday buys in recent years, but what do you do with them when you get them? Our guest today has some delicious recipes to put them to good use. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Do you own an air fryer or a pressure cooker? What do you throw in there? Did you get one as a gift? Is it just sitting there? I'd like to know what you like about them and, you know, what your favorite recipes may be. How do you use them best? Call 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. You can post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. James Shend is the deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine. James, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
It's Food Friday, and we've got Super Bowl Sunday, and we've got all these appliances that can make things easy and tasty, or so they say, if we use them in the right way. Let's start with the air fryers this afternoon. Can we actually fry food with air, James?
We can, and I was really surprised. I was skeptical when these first started coming onto the market about, what, maybe 10 years or so ago. And if your expectation is to be exactly like a deep fried food, you're not going to quite get there. But will it get you really, really close? Yes, it will. And it does a really good job of it.
So is cooking with an air fryer healthier than other methods of frying?
Significantly frying or healthier. And because you're using just a fraction, a small, small fraction of the oil. And in most cases, like the recipe that I've shared with you today is like it's a fried chicken. It's a Nashville hot chicken. And you coat the chicken just like you normally would for deep frying. And then you just spray it lightly with an olive oil spray or like Pam cooking spray, something like that. So you're getting just like not even a half a teaspoon of oil on that. And then it crisps up really nicely in the air fryer.
Half a teaspoon of oil to have a darn near deep fried experience. So the Nashville hot chicken, which you would think if it's Nashville hot chicken, it would have to come from a deep fryer. That recipe is available for you now on our website at WPR.org/Food Friday. So take us through this dish a little bit, James Shend. Besides the chicken, what tablespoon of oil? What else goes in there?
Well, this is a fantastic recipe I first had when I was down in Nashville and was introduced to it. It can be wicked hot depending on where you get it from. But it first starts out by you marinate some chicken with a little pickle juice and some pepper sauce. So like a Tabasco or whatever your favorite hot sauce is. And then you let that sit for an hour or so. You don't need a whole lot longer than that. And then after that, you're going to bread it with a little bit of flour, and then you dunk it in a egg and buttermilk mixture, and then you dunk it back into some flour. And then you spray it with the cooking spray, and you pop it in the air fryer for about, say, maybe 10 minutes or so. And then after it comes out, it's nice and crispy and spicy, and you're ready to go. But what they do differently down in Nashville is they make this chili oil. So it's about a half a cup of olive oil with some cayenne pepper, a little brown sugar to kind of help balance that out, some paprika, chili powder, a little garlic powder. And then they just drench the chicken with it. So when I was talking about it being healthy, we just lost it with the chili oil, but it is so, so good. And it's something I would recommend everyone try. It's not for the faint of heart. If you're not a spicy food fan, I would be a little cautious with the chili oil.
Yeah, that would make sense, but it also sounds delicious. But I mean, we're frying with air here, so a little bit healthier or a lot bit healthier. But what can you say about the taste, James?
The taste is fantastic. I mean, I've done many, many things in the air fryer. And like I said, I was not a big convert up until a little while ago. And what I've found is like things like vegetables, like broccoli, cauliflower, things like that. I just Toss in a little bit of olive oil, a little salt and pepper, throw it in there, and in about 8 minutes, it cooks up beautifully. You start to get those little brown bits on the edges, and it's a fraction of the time that it would be in a regular oven, and it does such a really good job of it.
Well, what
And
about?
if you're a fan of tater tots or French fries,
Yeah.
you're gonna love the air fryer.
That's exactly where I was going with it, because sometimes, you know, the French fries in the oven just aren't the same as when you go and get them from a deep fryer at a restaurant. But if you could put them in an air fryer and have a similar experience, well, I'd say that sounds like a plan.
And that's it. And like what it's also great for is leftovers. So like
Huh.
I'm a huge pizza fan, and trying to find the great way to reheat pizza is difficult, but the air fryer does it really, really well. Just toss it in there a couple of minutes and it's nice and crispy. The cheese is gooey. It's perfect.
I love that. James Shend, our guest, deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine, as we take a look at the appliances that are in your kitchen and the work that they do for us, taking your suggestions for your air fryer recipes at 1-800-642-1234. And I just curious about what. So the vegetables make sense, and my sister's got an air fryer, and if she wants her kids to eat vegetables, that's where they'll go before they end up on the table or on the plate. It's an easy way to make a crispy vegetable that is tolerable, maybe from the
It
teens,
is. Yeah.
and tasty.
And tasty too. That to me, that is the big key, because it's like trying to feed vegetables to kids. It's a hit or miss proposition. And if you steam them or try to cook them on the stovetop, they can go really mushy really fast. And so you have to kind of really know what you're doing. But with the air fryer, it's just a little bit of oil, some herbs if you want, toss it in there, and they get nice and crispy and crunchy and real easy to do.
James, what about cheese curds? Could we make that happen?
Easily, easily. We've got a similar recipe on our site, tasteofhome.com. And the trick to this is you can take the cheese curds, freeze them, and then dunk them in the batter and then freeze them again. And that way is you take them out of the freezer, put them in the air fryer, and then blast them with the heat. Because what happens if you don't have them frozen, the cheese melts before the coating can set. And
Yes.
so you're going to end up with liquid cheese flying around the inside of your air fryer, which is not a fun thing to clean up.
We'll
So, but
save
we
the.
found that, yeah. So we found the trick is to freeze it first.
Perfect. So, moving on now from air fryers to pressure cookers. We're frying with air. Are we cooking with pressure, James Shend?
We are. And this has been like grandma's favorite thing for decades. But for some reason, it is like hit the everyone's hot button in the last 10, 12 years. And we're talking Instant Pot here. For
Yes.
those that are not familiar with the like electric pressure cooker, Instant Pot everybody knows. And for some reason, everyone is flopping onto this trend, and it's great. There's a lot of great things about using a pressure cooker for. You save a lot of time, and it does a lot of things that you would normally take hours and hours to cook, can cook in a fraction.
So, Maureen wrote on our Facebook page this afternoon saying that she loves her Instant Pot and it makes cleanup incredibly easy. I would imagine compared to like exploding cheese in the air fryer. And Maureen makes soups and stews and yogurt in their Instant Pot.
Yes.
Yogurt,
Yes.
James?
Yogurt. There's many of the Instant Pot and other manufacturers of them have what is called a yogurt setting on there. And it's very, very simple to do. You just put in whole milk and whatever flavorings you want in the Instant Pot, seal it up, hit the yogurt button, and then walk away.
Whoa.
And then hours later, you come back and you've got perfect yogurt. And there's a number of people in our office that just swear by this and they make yogurt all the time.
James Shen, deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine, for your Food Friday with a look of air at air fryers, pressure cookers, and we'll get to the slow cookers here in a moment, slowly. But give me an idea here, James, what we would want to, what kind of foods work well in pressure cookers and the foods we'd want to avoid.
So the things that work really, really well in a pressure cooker are those tougher, like cheaper cuts of meat. So like the ribs, the shoulder, the pork, not the pork loin, but like short ribs, things like that, that have a lot of those connective tissues that take just a long time to just relax and soften up. And so traditionally you would do this in a braise, And so it'd be like a lot of liquid that you'd have the meat in, and then you'd have it on the in the oven or on the stovetop, just simmering away for like 3, 4, like 9, 10 hours, depending on what it is. A brisket can take up to 12 hours or so. But when you pop it into the Instant Pot, you're cutting that time down to less than an hour.
Mm.
And you get the same great flavor, and it just cooks in so much less time.
So one of the recipes you have for us, James Shend, over at WPR.org/Food Friday, is the pressure cooker pork. Tell us a little bit about this recipe and how we can just walk away and let it do its work.
So the recipe we have is called char siu pork, and it's C-H-A-R-S-I-U. And it's a Chinese dish that has a lot of very familiar ingredients to everybody. So it's hoisin sauce, honey, soy sauce, ketchup, a little ginger root. And then one of the more exotic things is Chinese five spice powder. And so you can find that at any supermarket. McCormick's makes it, Spice Island makes it. So it's everywhere. And it's just a mixture of star anise, fennel, peppercorns, cloves, and cinnamon stick. So they're very familiar ingredients. But when you pop all that into the slow cooker, along with a pork shoulder and then a little bit of chicken broth or water, then you end up with this very like hearty, but very flavorful dish. The pork just shreds like when it comes out. It's this beautiful like sandwich thing, but it's also great for packing for lunches. So it's one of my favorite things to cook.
Feel like we should be munching on a few hors d'oeuvres here this afternoon, James, tasting these out for the weekend. But your recipes are online at WPR.org/Food Fridays. You can check them out as we continue the discussion with our guest, the deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine, about our air fryers, pressure cookers, and what's next, our slow cookers, as well as your recipes at 1-800-642-1234. How are you using these appliances, and how can we expand your repertoire with a few other menu items, perhaps, to throw in these appliances and make things a little bit easier and tastier for you? 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation and hear from you coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn, and right now we're picking up our talk with James Shend from Taste of Home magazine. He's here with us talking about the rise in popularity of pressure cookers, air fryers, slow cookers, and we want to hear what you think at 1-800-642-1234. How often do you cook with an air fryer or pressure cooker? Do they make your food taste different than other methods of cooking? Easier, perhaps? And what advice would you have for the rest of us and how to use them right? How did you decide which one to buy? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. And James, a couple of questions here from listeners. One email to ask how an air fryer actually works and how is it different than deep frying?
So the easiest way to explain it is an air fryer is pretty much like a toaster oven on steroids. Okay. And so it's got a fan inside it. So it just heats up the like you would normally would with a toaster oven or a regular conventional oven. But then it's got a fan inside. And depending on the model or the brand of them, the fan can vary as how much intensity. And so there's some that just really get things going inside there and blowing things around. In fact, there's some recipes where we've tested where we put cheese on top of like a burger, and then all of a sudden the cheese is flopping around inside because the fan is so strong. But for the most part, it's just a regular oven that has a fan in there, so it keeps the air moving around it. And then if you just get a little bit of oil on there, then the air acts like almost kind of like a deep fryer somewhat, because it gets that oil hot really fast and then crisps everything up.
Mm. And it does so in a quite quickly. And as we talked about the pressure cookers, those are a quick meal. And that brings us to the casual cooking of a crock pot or a slow cooking. And so as we look at the different appliances and what's available to us, what do you see as the advantage of cooking something slowly, say, all day in a crock pot, James?
This you're harkening onto one of my favorite ways of cooking food. I love the long, slow cooking, and this is specifically braising, where I mentioned it before with the Instant Pot, where you would do that Chinese pork. You could do it, and it just takes a long, slow time in the oven. And the slow cooker does this really, really well. And so it keeps everything cooking at a bubbling away nicely. You don't have to worry about it. And so slow cookers have been around for, holy cow, I can't even think. I remember my mother making things in them when I was about 10. So we're now talking 45 years here. And so they've been around a long time, and they're starting to get, not starting, they've been upgrading them all along. So there's some now that you can brown in them, and they have the removable inserts, and you can go from the slow cooker directly to the stove or the oven if you want, and then directly to the serving table. So there's a lot of advantages to them. And the nice thing about it is you can throw things into it in the morning, go to work, leave them go, and then when you come home, you have a meal already set and waiting for you.
James, one of the questions I always have for a slow cooker is, how long is too long? How slow is too slow? When do you know when it's long enough?
So it kind of depends on what it is you're cooking. So there's certain rules that I kind of follow, and we don't kind of deviate them too far when we're at the Taste of Home Kitchens. And so like chicken, maximum time for me in a slow cooker is 6 hours max. Because at that point, the chicken starts to overcook, and you kind of get that gummy texture where there's no other way to describe it. It starts to kind of stick to your teeth texture, which is not good.
No.
But beef and pork do really, really well for long periods of time. You can cook beef like 10, maybe even 12 hours in a slow cooker. But the other nice function about these is they have warm settings. So you set it to cook for maybe 6 hours, and then it will switch itself to keep warm. So it's not going to cook the food any longer. It's just going to maintain it at that temperature. So if you wanted to cook chicken, but you're not going to be getting home for a few more hours, it'll switch itself to the keep warm setting and will just hold it there.
James Shend, our guest, he is the deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine, taking us through our home appliances we'll find in the kitchen and putting them to good use this afternoon. With a little help from you at 1-800-642-1234, some of your recipes for air fryers, pressure cookers, and your crock pot and slow cookers. And James, the slow cooker recipe you've shared with us today is for a frittata provençale. So take us through this. Take us through this dish.
So this is a good one because a lot of people think of slow cookers for dinner, and this one is a breakfast or a brunch. So it's kind of like a quiche, frittatas, quiches. They're all kind of the same thing. It's basically vegetables and meats suspended in egg. Yeah. And so this one is from the south of France, has all those flavors to it. We have a little potato in there, some onion, a little paprika, and then you get the thyme, which is very reminiscent of the southern France. And then you sprinkle a little goat cheese and sun-dried tomatoes in there. And so you're building all of this in a casserole dish. And you have to make sure that the dish fits into the slow cooker. And that's one of the big ones, because that hangs up a lot of people. And so then you slowly lower it into the slow cooker. And then you just cook it for like about 3 or 4 hours until it's set. So if you're going to have a brunch, say at 10 o'clock, just put it in at 7 and you're ready to go. You don't have to worry about it in the oven or other taking up space there. Mm-hmm. So this one is a really good one, but this Provençal frittata here is great for lunches. So you can make this up ahead of time, let it cool, and then portion it out and take it to work with you. You can microwave it or you can eat it cold. It doesn't matter. It's a really good way to kind of stretch those dollars and have a really tasty lunch.
Tom from Tomahawk called but couldn't stay with us, and he's been wanting to use beef bouillon in his crockpot stews, and he wonders, can they mix the bouillon right in?
Yes, you can. So I'm assuming he's talking like the bouillon cubes.
That's what it
you
sounds
can also
like, yeah.
You can get the bouillon. They have a granules or kind of crushed. So typically what I would do is, if you have the cubes, I would just lightly crush them a little bit, kind of help them get a start on the dissolving part. You can even mix them with a little warm water before you add it to the slow cooker.
That makes sense. I'm sorry, I keep going back to the idea of slow cooking eggs, and that just sounds like that would I go back to the question of how long is too long for eggs in a slow cooker, or how do you know when that frittata is done?
So you do it just until the eggs are set. So okay. You can jiggle the whole slow cooker and they will still jiggle a little bit. The firmer you get, the more rubbery it's going to be. Mm. And so you just got to kind of watch it. And so this one's cooked 3 to 4 hours, depending on, again, what kind of slow cooker you have. Because they all kind of, they're not the most exact on temperatures. So like a Hamilton Beach may cook a little bit hotter than a Breville. And so you just kind of have to keep an eye on it and get used to your slow cooker. But so we give a little bit wider range, like a 3 to 4 hour thing. But the thing is, you can stick a knife in it. If it comes out clean, you're done. Pull it out. And so you don't want to have those cook too long.
Yeah, that's a good old rule of the knife. It's just if it comes out clean, it's good to go.
Yep.
James
yep.
Shand, with the last minute we have here, this is we had Carrie from Milwaukee called, couldn't it stay with us? But she's, like many, got an air fryer as a present, but it's currently in place holding up a plant. What's the easiest way for her to get into air frying?
So the easiest way is using convenience products. So like if you have... like my son loves Hot Pockets. And so we always have a freezer full of those. So he can pull one out, pop it in there right after school, and it's done. You don't have to worry about it. Those are easy things to start with. Things like tater tots, French fries are also really good. Pop-Tarts are actually really good in an air fryer as well. And so those convenience products are a good gateway to kind of get you used to the machine and what to do with it. Then you can start to get more creative. And so we have recipes that people are making cupcakes and other things like that. You need the silicone cupcake mold that, because most of the cupcake liners that you see are like 6 and they won't fit into an air fryer. So you need the silicone ones, but they bake up beautifully. You can also do cookies. Cookies are great in the air fryer.
James, we're out of time, but I thank you so much for joining us today.
This is my life. This has been my pleasure.
You bet. We'll do it again. James Shand, deputy editor of Taste of Home magazine. He was with us today sharing recipes for using air fryers, slow cookers, and pressure cookers. Coming up Monday on The Morning Show, Kate Archer-Kent brings you the state capitol report and the latest out of Madison. Republican State Representative Jeremy Thiesfeld explains his vision for the future of education in Wisconsin. And Legal Action of Wisconsin joins Kate to explain the potential effects of cuts to public benefits. Bolo, be on the lookout for a giant pickle. Dylan T. Pickle, that is. He's been a mascot for a Portland, Oregon minor league baseball team, and he's been pickle-napped? I don't know. The story has an all-too-common beginning. Lost luggage, the Dylan T. Pickle costume, first disappeared somewhere inside JFK Airport, with the airline admitting that the packed pickle may be gone for good. That is until yesterday, when the Portland Pickles announced that their mascot had been found and was shipped back home. It was delivered to the baseball team's front door on Wednesday night after business hours, and in an all-too-common ending to this story, the package was stolen right off their doorstep, and Dylan T. Pickle is now gone again. Taken! Quick, somebody check on Bucky. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. Central Time here on the Ideas Network, and I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today. Coming up tonight after 6 on 1A+, several states are redistricting ahead of the midterm elections, and Republicans have raised objections in New York. Democrats objected to Alabama's new maps. In North Carolina, the state Supreme Court told Republicans to go back to the drawing board. And what about Wisconsin? That's tonight at 6 on 1A+. Now, marijuana as medicine, and Wisconsin as a relative island of marijuana prohibition. Will weed be legalized for medicinal use in our state? Right now, there are two competing proposals in the Wisconsin legislature, but does either bill have any chance of making it to the governor's desk and being signed into law? And why is Wisconsin's debate over legal access to marijuana important? Our next guest is one of the lawmakers behind the Democrats' proposal to legalize medical marijuana, and we want to hear from you as well at 1-800-642-1234. What's the most important part of this ongoing debate and discussion about legalization for you? Is it the revenue, the jobs, the medicine, the effects of decriminalization? What's been missing from this conversation as you've heard it so far? Who's been missing from this conversation, for that matter? 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Wisconsin Assemblymember Diane Hesselbein is a Democrat who represents District 79 in South Central Wisconsin, and I spoke to her earlier today about her medical marijuana bill. You have a proposal along with State Senator John Erpenbach for legalizing marijuana for medical use. What would your plan do?
My plan creates a regulated process that requires a recommendation from a treating physician with whom a patient with a debilitating condition has an established relationship. We have introduced medical cannabis legislation for years, and we're just hoping that it can really help the people in the state of Wisconsin.
Well, how does your legislation stand out from previous attempts at legalizing medical marijuana?
Well, we've had ones in the past. I know the Republicans just put one out last week. Their bill was very different than the one that Senator Erpenbach and I put out. The Republican bill adds a 10% tax, and Senator Erpenbach and I don't believe that people's medicine should be taxed. The Republican bill also doesn't allow people to legally grow small amounts of cannabis for their own medicinal use. And that really hurts our rural communities because they're going to be left out if they don't live near a dispensary. They have to travel for hours to get to one. And we've really listened to people in the state of Wisconsin that would like medical marijuana and grow their own plants safely. So our bill allows people to do that.
Is there concern about the potential for abuse or misuse of marijuana?
I don't believe so. You know, I think the state of Wisconsin is ready for marijuana, and I'll be very clear that I am in full support of Senator Agard's full legalization of marijuana. But if we can't get there yet with the Republican Party, this is a step in the right direction, and we really need to be helping those people who need it for medicinal purposes.
Yeah, State Representative Hesselbein, why is this important to you?
Well, I'm really fortunate. I am married to a veteran, and he has many friends and colleagues that have told me over the years that this legislation would help them with a lot of problems that they have that they sustained during combat and have current injuries. And to hear those stories and to hear stories of my friends and sometimes their adult children who have cancer and what legal cannabis could do to help them when they're facing such pain in their life, this just seems like a no-brainer to me.
So there is some bipartisan support in the legislature for some legalization. There are some strong polling numbers in terms of public support for it as well. And so if there is support for it, where is the holdup? Where is the pushback? Where are you finding the bumps in the road?
I've been really pleased looking at all the different polls in the state of Wisconsin throughout the years. Like in 2014, for legalizing marijuana, you know, only 41% were in favor. But in 2019, that jumped to 59% of people in the state of Wisconsin in the poll were in favor. And I'm hopeful we can finally get there. I really do think we possibly can. But, you know, I've looked at other things that people have voted on through the years. For example, fair and nonpartisan redistricting. And it seems like, you know, overwhelmingly people in the state of Wisconsin are for nonpartisan redistricting. However, Speaker Voss is not. So that's the linchpin that we have in the state of Wisconsin. If Speaker Voss doesn't like it, it doesn't move forward. And it's extremely unfortunate that one person has that much power in the state of Wisconsin.
I understand, at least from some media reports, that Speaker Voss has given some vocal support to medical marijuana.
In 2019, he mentioned that he would be in favor of looking at it.
Okay.
So if that was 2019, it's 2022. He has a few different proposals he can look at, and we're still in session. And it is really my hope that Speaker Voss takes a look at this legislation and decides to give it a hearing, maybe even the Republican bill, too, on medical marijuana, give that a hearing, and hear from the people of Wisconsin what they want to see done with this important issue.
So what would be the next procedural step for your proposal, State Representative Hesselbein?
Well, we turned the bill in, and we wait for a number, which the speaker will be giving it a number, and then we press him on getting it a public hearing. And so, I think that's when we can really hear from ordinary Wisconsinites that can come forward and let us know if there are changes that need to be made to the bill, what they want to see in the bill. But for the sake of the health of the people in the state of Wisconsin, we really have to get this moving.
What's the reality of being a so-called marijuana desert surrounded by some forms of legalization on most sides?
It is so unfortunate that everyone around us pretty much has legalized marijuana. And there's certainly, you know, a lot more that have medical marijuana. Wisconsin is missing the boat, and we're missing that tax revenue for full legalization as well. It's really disappointing and disheartening because a total of 37 states, the District of Columbia, Guam, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands have approved comprehensive publicly available medical marijuana or cannabis programs. That's 37 states. They are putting people's health at the forefront, letting them get this important medical help that Wisconsin refuses to give.
Do you see any compromise between the proposal from you and State Senator Erpenbach along with the GOP bill?
Certainly my door is always open, and I'm happy to meet with Senator Falkowski at any time to talk about how maybe we can merge these two ideas into one bill that would help the state of Wisconsin.
State Representative Diane Hesselbein, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
And that was our conversation from earlier today about her proposal, along with State Senator John Erpenbach, to legalize medical marijuana in the state. Now, we're going to hear from a state marijuana policy expert about how these partisan proposals in Wisconsin's legislature stack up against what other states either have on the books or already or are looking at in their own legislatures. And we want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234 with the calls already coming in favor or opposed. This debate's gone on for a while, and yet there seems to be some changes in attitudes and opinions. So what do you think? Do you like the sound of Representative Hesselbein's plan? 1-800-642-1234. Let's bring into the conversation now Jax James. She's the state policy manager for the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, or NORML, where she stays on top of hundreds of marijuana-related policy proposals happening around the country, working with state lawmakers as well as advocates. Jax, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me.
So now a lot to work with in the conversation with State Representative Hesselbein. But first, to get your reaction on the two what appear to be competing proposals for legalizing medical marijuana in Wisconsin, one appears to have the support of Democrats and one of Republicans.
Well, I think that it's important to see this legislation being filed. You know, there's not a robust program for access in Wisconsin. And in fact, possession is still criminalized. So that could be putting patients in jail. So this is extremely important legislation. And I'm glad to see both parties are talking about it. And hopefully we can come to some common ground and do the most good for the most patients.
So the Democrats' version would create a medical cannabis registry under the state's Department of Health Services and let physicians prescribe it for certain patients. There's also a component for licensing folks that are part of the infrastructure, growers and sellers, but only for medical consumption. What's your take on this proposal, Jax?
Well, I mean, I think it's very targeted to help relieve the access need that many patients have. And so it's an important conversation to have. Like you mentioned, there are other legislation bills that have been authored that have to do with decriminalization, creating a regulated adult use market. And so I think while all of these are important conversations, we have to at least stop the medical discrimination and not allowing people to have access to this plant.
Then the Republicans are looking for a regulatory commission that would fall under the revenue department. They'd allow primary care providers to prescribe it, but only in smokeless forms. Have you seen components like that move forward in other states?
Yes, you know, there are some states that have specifically banned the consumption of combusted cannabis flower, and others who have recently updated their laws to actually include and allow it. You know, combustion, a lot of the conversation has to do with, you know, exposing people to secondhand smoke. And there's some, you know, science behind those different components. And really what happens is some people need a very fast onset administration route. And if you're using oral or topical, that's going to be a slow onset. And inhaled cannabis, whether it be vaporized or combusted, is going to serve that best. And I think it's up to a doctor and a patient to decide which form of cannabis is best for the condition that they live with.
Jax James, State Policy Manager for Normal, and your calls as well at 1-800-642-1234, where Angela joins us in Baraboo this afternoon. Good afternoon, Angela.
Hi. I'm calling because I originally lived in California. The reason I'm calling is because I do believe that medical marijuana, I am in favor of it. I have seen it help people in the edible and the tincture form. I've seen people with cerebral palsy suddenly be able to move without the pain and just the palsy that comes with the disease. I've seen bipolar people suddenly be able to handle their mood swings, and they're not taking a drug that's going to have side effects like tardive dyskinesia. Also, I know that a lot of people will argue that, oh, if we approve it, it's going to be a gateway drug. The people that seek the type of high that comes from marijuana aren't generally people that are going to go to another drug. So I, again, don't feel that that's an issue. And again, recreationally, you know, that's a different argument. But medically, I have seen this work.
Angela, I appreciate that. I want to get a reaction here from Jax. And, you know, so anecdotally, Angela has seen where this has worked. So what's the pushback? Where is the, you know, Jax, where do you see the stoppage of medical marijuana in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, it can be confusing because it does make sense that this would be, you know, broadly embraced. But often we see legislators lag behind the public. So while there is, you know, overwhelming support up in the 80s, I want to say 88% of people from Wisconsin want to see a robust medical program, the legislators are lagging behind. And we see that both chambers are currently held by the Republicans with a Democratic governor. And so I think that there's going to be a lot of conversation about negotiating where this bill is going to go, because it can bring relief to a lot of people. As the caller mentioned, there's a lot of different medical uses for this plant. And the reason why is it addresses your endocannabinoid system, which has receptors in many of the different parts of your body. And so it works through that system to bring homeostasis to whatever issue you're having. And we are seeing a lot of people, especially with pain, when they have the option to use medical cannabis, they will stop or greatly decrease the amount of opioids that they're taking, which we know have damaging and harmful side effects.
We're talking with Jax James, State Policy Manager for Normal. We're looking at a couple of current proposals in the latest attempt to legalize marijuana here in Wisconsin. And we want to hear from you and what you think at 1-800-642-1234. Where do you stand on the national versus state legalization conversation? We've got a state Republican leader saying we should wait for the federal government to legalize it before taking any action at the state level. What's your reaction to that? 1-800-642-1234 to join us. Our conversation continues here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret, and we continue our talk with Jax James, State Policy Manager for Normal, looking at a couple of proposals for legalizing marijuana here in Wisconsin and what's going on in this space around the country. Your calls are welcome at 1-800-642-1234, emails as well, ideas at WPR.org. And Jax, before we go back to the phones, we heard the state, our state representative, Diane Hesselbein, earlier talking about negative aspects of Wisconsin being an island when it comes to surrounding states and marijuana legalization. What's your take on what we're missing out on here in the Badger State?
Well, I mean, whenever you're wasting taxpayer funds on arresting, prosecuting, and perhaps even jailing people for possession of a plant that in other states some revenue is being made on in the adult use market, then you really have a backwards situation there. Additionally, you know, it's extremely important that this medical cannabis be available to patients. We see it in 37 other states, from very robust programs to the more limited ones. And I think that there's a way that it can be thoughtfully done for Wisconsin to make sure that it serves the patients there. And as far as, you know, the regulated adult use market, that's a conversation that definitely needs to be had, but it should not get in the way of patient access. And, you know, I wanted to also bring up taxation, which was something that the legislator mentioned. You know, patients do not pay taxes on other medications that they take. In fact, often you can take your amount of prescription, you know, spending, and you can deduct it on your tax form. So I don't think it's the right thing to make tax revenue off of, you know, patients, and rather we should focus any tax revenue through the adult regulated market.
With a complete prohibition of marijuana right now in Wisconsin, where does that stand in comparison to the other states across the country, Jax?
Well, you know, there are a few states, and most of them go through the legislative process to change their laws, who've not yet decriminalized. And in Wisconsin, you know, we do see that there is still the criminalization of it, but we do see at the local level that there have been some cities, about a dozen of them, that have chosen to take efforts to decriminalize it at their local level. So, you know, Wisconsin surprisingly is behind on the times when it comes to updating their laws regarding, you know, having this be a criminal, you know, misdemeanor instead of treating it like a civil penalty or just taxing and regulating the plant as an adult market.
Jax James, State Policy Manager for Normal, and your calls at 1-800-642-1234, where Brett in Milwaukee is standing by. Brett, good afternoon.
Hi, I was wondering if there's actually any research from other states about the use of cannabis and like legalization affecting alcohol usage at all. I think culturally, Wisconsinites, you know, kind of have a drinking problem. So I was wondering if legalizing a cannabis form would potentially be a less damaging form of a substance, where even in the worst case scenarios, if someone's abusing cannabis, they're potentially not committing domestic abuse at home or getting in really dangerous car accidents. That's just my comments.
I appreciate the question, Brett, especially for Wisconsin. And Angela before argued against the idea that marijuana would be a gateway drug. And Brett is suggesting that with our alcohol consumption in Wisconsin, that marijuana might provide some relief or respite. Jax, what do you know about that?
Well, there's a lot of campaigns that discuss about how cannabis is safer than alcohol or tobacco in many ways. And so it is a safer alternative in that sense, whenever we're talking about choosing to put something inside of your body. But I think that it's extremely important to note that even whenever cannabis is legalized for a regulated adult use market, there is still, you know, rules against driving under the influence. And so that will never be acceptable to do. It's all about responsible use. And just like there are drunk driving laws, driving while intoxicated should not be tolerated because we have to watch out for each other on the roads.
Do you expect any movement towards legalization, decriminalization, even just for medical marijuana at the national level anytime soon, Jax?
You know, the president has made quite a few statements and some campaign promises regarding this. We haven't seen any action on it yet, but you will note that the Safe Banking Act was included in the Compete Act and is moving on through the legislative process. So we're hopeful that at least banking can be resolved. But hopefully the president will return to this important issue and do the right thing and deschedule it at the federal level so states can continue to deal with cannabis through decriminalization and regulated markets.
Got time for one more call, and that'll be Andrew in Green Bay this afternoon. Andrew, you're on with Jax James, the state policy manager for Normal.
Hi, thanks for having me.
What do you think?
So, yeah, I'm a organic farmer. I've been farming for 5 years, taking over my parents' farm here in Green Bay. And I just want to stress the absolute importance that farmers can play in this whole wild west of not only the medical, but the recreational marijuana market. You know, we as organic farmers especially see the food that we grow as medicine, and adding something like marijuana, not just CBD hemp, can be absolutely critical to it. And then not only that, looking at the hypocrisy of our Republican Congress people that always at any chance try and get behind farmers when they're presented with an opportunity to actually support us. You see what they do. They kick the can down the road and don't do anything about it.
Andrew, would you grow if you legally could?
Yeah, absolutely.
I appreciate that perspective, and we're short on time. Jax, James, we didn't even take a look at what it would do to our agrarian economy here in Wisconsin and the potential for farmers.
Well, I mean, definitely there's going to be a need for people who understand plants and how to grow things. And I think that it also tangentially brings up another important conversation. You know, the legislators' bill included home cultivation for 12 plants, you know, discussing how it can be difficult to perhaps get rural people in, but also people who maybe are lower income and cannot afford to purchase the medicine could grow their own. And so these are all extremely important attributes of a medical cannabis program, and you know, farmers play their role just like they do in the foods that we eat.
What are you looking for next, Jax?
In Wisconsin, you know, I think it's extremely important that we start with some compassionate use and stop the bleeding by decriminalizing cannabis. You know, I think this session will probably have a robust conversation about legalization, and I hope that we can see some advancement in those areas as well. So I think everyone should go to normal.org/act and make sure they participate in our action alerts in Wisconsin and also our federal action alerts to continue to push for descheduling at the federal level.
Jax, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It was lovely.
Jax James, State Policy Director for Normal, talking about bipartisan proposals, or partisan proposals in the state legislature, rather, and the latest attempt to legalize marijuana in Wisconsin. Coming up after the news, $7 million for 30 seconds of advertisements during Sunday's Super Bowl, according to NBC. And a lot of those ads will be inviting you to gamble on the game. It will certainly look like $7 million on the TV on Sunday, but we're going to go beyond all that glitz and glamour to find out what this fast-growing business of sports gambling is doing to us. I'm Lee Rayburn, and for Rob Ferret, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network.